History is shaped by an eternal tension between two fundamental forms of human organization, hierarchical towers and horizontal networks. While we've always been natural networkers, our brains evolved specifically for social connection in groups of around 150 people, most of recorded history has been dominated by rigid hierarchies. This paradox sits at the heart of Niall Ferguson's exploration. From the neural connections in our brains to the first human settlements, networking is our natural state. Yet for millennia, power concentrated in towers of authority, churches, castles, corporations, and government buildings. Why? Because hierarchies solved practical problems of coordination as societies grew more complex. They reduced time-consuming negotiations that might escalate into conflicts, provided clear lines of authority, and enabled efficient resource allocation. The physical embodiment of this tension could be seen in medieval towns, where towers of secular power literally overshadowed but never eliminated the market squares where networks flourished. The formal study of networks began with Leonhard Euler's solution to the Königsberg Bridge problem in 1735, but our understanding deepened dramatically in the 20th century. When schoolteacher Johannes de Litch mapped friendships among his students in 1900, he launched a field that would eventually reveal the hidden architecture of human connection. We now understand that networks operate according to specific principles. Homophily, birds of a feather flock together, the formation of balanced triads, where the friend of my friend is my friend, and the critical importance of weak ties that bridge otherwise isolated clusters. Stanley Milgram's famous 1967 experiment demonstrated 6 degrees of separation by showing that random Americans could connect to specific targets through an average of just 5 intermediaries. What makes this small-world phenomenon so remarkable is that despite our tendency to form tight clusters of similar people, we remain connected to strangers through surprisingly few steps. These principles help explain how ideas, innovations, and even revolutions can spread with unexpected speed. The printing press, established by Johannes Gutenberg around 1450, created history's first information revolution. Without this technology, Martin Luther might have been just another executed heretic. Instead, when he sent his 95 theses to the Archbishop of Mainz in 1517, printing ensured his ideas spread rapidly throughout Europe. The Reformation unleashed a religious revolt that threw Europe into turmoil for over a century, with Protestant sects developing resilient network structures that survived persecution. When authorities executed key Protestant figures in England during Mary I's reign, their networks survived because other members with high betweenness centrality stepped into leadership roles. The economic consequences were profound. Before Luther, Northwestern Europe showed little advantage over empires like China or the Ottomans. After the Reformation, Protestant states displayed greater economic dynamism, not because of Protestant ethics, but because resources shifted from religious to secular activities. 2/3 of German monasteries and Protestant territories were closed, their assets sold to wealthy subjects, and university students abandoned monastic vocations for worldly pursuits. The Enlightenment thrived through private correspondence networks alongside printed works. Scholars have mapped these connections through thousands of surviving letters between over 6,000 authors. Despite their cosmopolitan reputation, these networks were largely national. Voltaire's network of 1,400 people was 70% French, with most letters connected to Paris. Political revolutions of the late 18th century similarly depended on networks. Paul Revere's effectiveness came not from heroic individualism as portrayed in Longfellow's poem, but from his position as a key broker connecting disparate resistance clusters in revolutionary Massachusetts. Freemasonry provided another crucial networking structure, with its international organization and rituals creating brotherhood bonds. Boston's St. Andrew's Lodge, established under Edinburgh authority in 1761, became a center of revolutionary activity, particularly after Joseph Warren became its master. Following the revolutionary era, hierarchical structures reasserted themselves. A pentarchy of five great powers, Austria, Britain, France, Prussia, and Russia, established at the Congress of Vienna, created a new international order. As Henry Kissinger noted, this generally accepted legitimacy of the five-power system provided Europe relative peace between 1815 and 1914. While networks persisted, royal, aristocratic, and ecclesiastical hierarchies became skilled at co-opting them and channeling their creative energies. This balance collapsed in the early 20th century through both literal and metaphorical plagues, from influenza to radical ideologies. The Bolshevik Revolution spread through networks of soldiers, sailors, and workers, but Lenin's followers quickly transformed it into a hierarchical system more brutal than the Tsarist regime. Similarly, Nazism began as a network movement before evolving into history's most terrifying hierarchy. The Nazi Party grew from under 100,000 members in 1928 to over 8 million by 1945, functioning like a religious movement with Hitler as its messianic figure. The Cambridge spies represent one of history's most remarkable examples of networks operating within hierarchies. This extraordinary penetration of Britain's most exclusive intellectual network began when Soviet agent Arnold Deutsch recruited Kim Philby, who nominated Donald Maclean. Guy Burgess was recruited next, who then brought in Anthony Blunt. In total, at least 9 Cambridge graduates spied for the Soviets. None reconsidered their allegiance even when the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact aligned Stalin with Hitler in 1939. Their contribution to the Soviet war effort was staggering. London became the KGB's most productive station, supplying nearly 9,000 classified documents in 1941 alone. Britain's intelligence services were remarkably easy to penetrate due to chronic lack of counter-espionage. Pre-war vetting was inadequate, and MI5's head, Sir Vernon Kell, insisted Soviet activity was non-existent as late as 1939. Incredibly, Philby became head of Section 9, dedicated to Soviet counterespionage in 1944. This case illustrates how networks can operate invisibly within hierarchical structures, redirecting their resources toward entirely different purposes. The Internet originated as a defense project when RAND researcher Paul Baran developed ARPANET in 1969 to create a communication system resilient to nuclear attack. Unlike typical government initiatives, it grew organically. The first computer-to-computer communication happened in October 1969, expanding to over 40 nodes connecting universities and companies by 1971. While Silicon Valley thrived with this networked approach, the Soviet Union failed to develop its own internet despite ambitious plans, contributing to its downfall. Today's digital landscape presents a dilemma. Despite hopes for democratization, the web has evolved into a scale-free network with hyper-connected superhubs. Ownership is highly concentrated. Google, worth $660 billion, Facebook, $441 billion, creating a division between network owners and users. Facing America's network revolution, Europe chose regulation, while China strategically developed local alternatives like Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. The question remains whether networks will liberate us from administrative states or be co-opted by established hierarchies. History suggests digital utopianism is misplaced. The eternal dance between squares and towers continues, showing that while technologies evolve, fundamental dynamics of human organization remain consistent.